Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We're joined now by the group CEO of Mohau Media Group, which plays a very important role in talent management and representation in South African sport, Neil Jelankovic. I hope I've pronounced your last name correctly, Neil.
Gugu, you did well. It's not an easy name. It's actually Jankolovic, but Jank is also fine. But Jankolovic is a cool name. So thank you.
I appreciate that correction. Thank you, Jankolovic. I'll pronounce it correctly going forward. You have a very intriguing job, but more so, you also have a very interesting career, given that you at one point were also entrepreneurial in the establishment of MSC Sports, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe just give us some insight into this management of sporting athletes and representation just as an industry, and how perhaps it's grown and shifted in South Africa in comparison to its international counterparts.
Thanks, Gugu. So just by way of intro, I guess the journey started in roughly 2000 when we started MSC Sports. Fortunately, the business has grown over the years into what we call a full-service sponsorship agency, and one of the key divisions within that business is talent management, which in layman's terms means, the famous show me the money line. So, yes. So it's all about managing some of the best sportsmen and women in South Africa. And thankfully, we've been able to grow a group of different advertising and sponsorship and YouTube platforms, all in marketing services and media. But we're here to talk about our no-play and talent management. So I'm here to answer your questions, Gugu.
Yes, no, definitely we are. And I really appreciate the perspective, because it just helps us understand the kind of opportunity that exists in terms of talent management. And maybe let's start there. Whenever anyone looks or watches a documentary, a movie around the lives of someone like a Muhammad Ali or even the Williams sisters, ultimately, the talent that these athletes have in the sporting codes that they have can be leveraged in other spaces, but also needs to be treated with the sensitivity of it being a career. So maybe let's start there. What is the role of talent management in shaping an athlete's career?
So I think, as you rightly mentioned, and as we all know, if you take, for example, you know, the Williams sisters, when you watch that amazing documentary, yes, about how much effort and work their family put in to actually developing their careers. It starts, athletes, the best in the world, have to put in those 10,000 hours, and it starts when they are very, very young. As they progress in, you know, from being an amateur into a professional, they generally need someone to advise and help them segue from being an amateur to becoming a professional. And that's like anything in life, that's a real transition. And I do believe that the most successful athletes in the world, like anyone, and in your show, you interview some of the best businessmen and women in South Africa. Ultimately, it's about surrounding yourself with good people. Mm. And so, having done this for a long period of time, I can tell you the most important decision is about who the individual marries. That's really the real deciding factor. But then, it has a big role to play in the longevity of an athlete and the success of an athlete. That's my personal experience. I don't have data to confirm it. But then, also importantly, who they choose to manage their career. Mm-hmm. And I guess those decisions play a big role in how they unfold as professional men and women in the world of sport and entertainment.
Got you. Something you touched on, Neil, which is so important, is how early to start. And again, some of the international athletes we've spoken about got into their careers really young and were propelled to have the right teams and individuals around them to manage their careers quite early. So is there, you know, how early should one actually start planning for life for their sporting career, but also life afterwards as well?
Oof. Well, let's start with the sporting career. So Gugu, obviously the data, you know, talks to the Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours. And so to achieve success in anything, but particularly I'm going to talk to sport and entertainment, but sport, you know, on the field, essentially you have to start at a very, very young age if you're going to be the best in the world and if you want to succeed. Obviously, you accelerate your ability will dictate how successful you're going to be. But if you don't start at a very young age, it's very unlikely that you're going to be one of the best in your sphere. So that's the first thing. And how early should one focus, once you are a professional, on post-career? You know, the biggest challenge managing talent and professional sportsmen and women is the fact that this career, when you're in it, feels like it's never going to end. Yeah. And then when it ends, it is the most sudden and drastic change in anyone's life. It's almost a traumatic event, I have to say, because I don't think anything ever prepares a professional athlete for what comes the day after. And I suppose recent examples of that are Itumeleng Khune. I mean, think about it. 3 or 4 years ago, Itu was... Yeah, he is a household name, but you know, he literally was on the tongue of, or the tip of the tongues of everyone who loves South African soccer. And you know, the negotiation with Kaizer Chiefs in terms of him, you know, extending his career just never played out the way he would have liked. And the next day, he's no longer a professional athlete. He can't get a contract. And I suppose that speaks to how sudden it is and how important it is for athletes to plan and prepare. But I don't think anything can prepare them for the emotional shift from being in the limelight one day and literally the next day just dissipating, not waking up and going to training and having cameras on you.
That is so important. And maybe let's touch on that before we touch on the financial aspects as well, because that's a very valid point. It's almost a similar psychology to individuals who head out into retirement. Their days have typically been filled with so much activity. But as you mentioned, when you're a sports star, there's the fame, the attention, just the knowledge of knowing that you're the greatest of your generation. And then that kind of shifts. Is this why we sometimes see a lot of athletes then falling into depression and other, I guess, consequences of bad decision-making just because they don't necessarily have the psychological safety and support that's provided?
Yeah, I think that sums it up, Google. It's a very, I mean, obviously I've seen so many athletes go through this, and no matter how much one can prepare the athlete for this transition.
Oh boy, Neil, seems as though the line is...
The role of family.
Okay, go ahead. Do continue.
Sorry, Google. Just to say, that's what I alluded to a bit earlier, the role of family. So that's really where the spouse or partner of a professional athlete or personality can come to the fore, because, you know, that's the sense of you're still loved and you are still in someone's life when you transition from being a professional. Because whilst you're a professional sportsman or woman, everyone wants you. Everyone wants your time. Everyone wants to be close to you, take pictures of you, understand who you are. And the moment it ends, you know, you walk into a room and the real person that you're going to have to look at is yourself in the mirror, number one. And number two, hopefully have your family around you to help you, you know, move into the next stage of your life.
100%. That does speak to some examples we can allude to that are great, though. I think Lucas Radebe comes to mind. Man, as a phenomenal athlete and someone who has had staying power in terms of his career, he still gets calls to feature as key partners with big brands, has been known as a father figure. He posts a lot with his son on social media, and has been keeping, I guess, you know, the his career going in other ways. What lessons can we learn from individuals like him and many others who have shown to have a sustainable career post their footballing or athletic lives?
Yeah, you know, Kuk, it's a great Ru's an unbelievable example, because I think the lesson is there's only one word, and it's humility. And I suppose what's so amazing about, you know, Lucas and many others, as you mentioned, and South Africa, as we've been blessed with wonderful examples of this, is, you know, on your way up, you're going to meet lots of people, and you better be humble and kind, because you're going to need them on your way down. And that's obviously a famous, you know, anecdote. And I suppose Ru's the perfect example of that, because I remember I went to Leeds, actually, to watch him play, and I met him many, many, many years ago. And firstly, if you ever want to see someone that reverence isn't the word, he's idolized, actually, in a city. But the humility that he dealt with every single person on his way up and then through his time, you know, in Leeds, then coming back to, you know, Amakhosi, and wherever he ever conducted himself, the only word, and I've seen him in many different environments, the word that comes to mind is humility. And I suppose that's what breeds longevity, because if one is humble and one is able to deal with people, no matter how famous you are or how important you are, with a sense of humility and grace, then, you know, you are always going to be revered, whether you're on the field or off the field. And I think, you know, Lucas is a great example of that, because, as you say,
He's a brand ambassador for, you know, still for two or three of the biggest brands in South Africa. And it's only it's a tribute to, I think, who he is as a person as much as who he was as a footballer.
100%. So clearly this shows the role and the importance of talent management, not just when you happen to be a superstar and the best in the game at the moment, but transitioning into life after. And I'm keen to get your thoughts on how talent management has evolved in a market like South Africa, especially where there's heightened awareness of making sure that athletes do live full, favorable lives. We've even seen a few athletes, you know, go through a bit of a dip, and then, you know, many key stakeholders have come to help them rehabilitate and recreate new career paths for themselves. So this means you and your team do a very important job here, Neil.
Yeah, thanks, Google. I think firstly, it's become more and more competitive. No matter which sport you consider, whether it's the big three or, you know, Cinderella sports, as you know, we know them, or some of the smaller sports, there are many, many more agents and people who wish to manage athletes simply because there's more and more money in professional sports. So that attracts, you know, people to want to participate in that environment. So it has become more competitive, number one. Number two, I think the reality is that Jerry Maguire scene and that show is never going to change because, you know, the primary function of an agent is to ensure that their talent or the individual gets the best contract possible and gets the best opportunity to enable maximizing their career. So that kind of show me the money scene is step one, and that will never change. And that's not as simple, and I suppose that if you're familiar with the scene, you'll know that is not as simple as, obviously, when you're managing, let's say, an Itukuni at the time of his, you know, prime of his career, or Mofa King at the moment, where everyone wants him, you know, from power. That's easy to do, but it's more about the difficult times when the player might have been injured or is a free agent and isn't as, you know, in demand as he would like, yeah, or she would like. And so that's when you really have to focus on, and I suppose that is purely about having deep relationships with the clubs or the franchises that are obviously the buyers, in inverted commas. So that's one. Then two, once that contract is secured, then it's about how you can enable that athlete in whichever way possible to have a successful career. And so sometimes it's as menial as making sure that they've got their basic boots, shin pads or cricket bats or tennis rackets or whatever it may be, whatever the sport is, all the way through to ensuring that if they are moving from a different city, that their transition from one city to the next is just seamless. And I suppose in some sense, the second function is what I'm alluding to, is it's almost administrative. And then finally, I think it's about ensuring that the individual is set up for financial success over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And if you kind of said that's the triumvirate of enabling success for professional athletes in the modern world, I would say yes, those are the three pillars. There are other, I'll just allude to, so what's changed, obviously, social media has become very important, making sure that their ability to grow their audience on their personal platforms has become much more important because that enables that third pillar, which is, you know, obviously maximizing revenues. So I guess that's the biggest change. If you said, where's the biggest focus? So we at MSC Sports in our talent division have got a full-time employee that's purely community managing our athletes' social media and growing their audience.
So is it risky to have them manage it by themselves?
Well, to be honest, the saying that we have is that the talent needs to focus on the field and we'll focus and help them off the field. And so, you know, if you've got players more focused on Instagram, TikTok and, you know, other, then you got a problem because their job needs to be go to training, work as hard as possible, go home and rest, eat properly, you know, do it again. And so our job is to actually take that away from them so they can focus what's happening on the field.
Got you. There's a very brief question that we do have from one of our listeners who's actually sent through a voice note, and I think this one's related largely to what we saw yesterday with the shift in the sponsorship, lead sponsorship of the Springboks, shifting from MTN to FNB. Hopefully you'll hear this audio, Neil, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to respond to it. It's from Big S. Let's take a listen.
Evening, Kuku and the listeners. Kuku, I don't know if I'm out of topic. Kuku, I wanted to ask or understand, Uguti, what's the gain to sponsor a team like, as you say, Uguti, the the FNP is going to sponsor Springbok now. So what's the gain the FNP is going to gain if they sponsor Springbok? I understand the Springbok is going to maybe get funds from Ilontuzana FNP, but when as a sponsor, what are your benefits of sponsoring someone, even if like you sponsor an individual? What are your benefits except in marketing, I can say?
Biggest, thank you so much for your question. In my own limited knowledge of marketing, I think brand equity is the huge thing here. But Neil, maybe you can also elaborate on this. And as he asked, what's the benefits for a brand to sponsor individuals or even teams? And as a talent manager, you would know all about this. So maybe help us unpack the kind of value that's derived.
Right, thanks, Google. And a great question from Big S. I heard it loud and clear.
Awesome.
So, Big S, to you, I suppose the starting point with sponsorship, and we believe this it's a very powerful marketing medium. And the primary, power of sponsorship is that it's able to deliver a measurable return on what it is that you're investing. And the way that it's able to do that is you are able to understand what your objectives are at the outset and then deliver on that basis. And so some forms of marketing, for example, digital marketing, you can measure as well. But the power of sponsorship is that it gives you the association with something very emotive. And it's that emotional connection to the consumer that differentiates your brand from another. So if you said, what's in it for FNB? First and foremost, they're going to get massive exposure. And so that gives you, eyes and visual, and you see the brand. And so that's step one. But how do you actually connect with the consumer, keeping in mind there's so many messages coming at us all the time? And I think that's the beauty of sponsorship. And what you'll see FNB, I'm sure, will do very, very effectively is they will understand what their key business objectives are from the sponsorship, and then use the sponsorship to deliver those key objectives. And so if, for example, it's to try and get a new, I suppose a good example would be to get people to open bank accounts. That's what they're about. I'm sure it's one of the rights that they've secured with the Springboks is they'll have something called a pre-sale. So if you're an FNB bank card holder, perhaps for a period of time, you'll be able to purchase tickets to the Springbok rugby matches before anyone else. And if they haven't thought of that, well, then
there's probably the... An idea?
So they will use the sponsorship, A, to get brand awareness, B, to connect with the consumer, C, to differentiate themselves from their competition they are going to be supporting the iconic brand in South Africa. And then finally, they'll deliver on their business objectives and ultimately whatever those objectives are. Mm-hmm. So because I think that it's a lot of money. They will be writing a big check. But in truth, the Springboks are probably in the top three most valuable assets in South Africa from a sponsorship perspective. And I think if the sponsorship is sweated hard, they will get real return. I think it's an exciting change for what's to come in South African sport.
Definitely. We spoke to both a representative, the CEO of MTN South Africa last night, as well as the CMO of FNB. I asked them both about the number, and as you can appreciate, there's some confidentiality around it. But if there was a range that you could share with us, Neil, if you have any knowledge of this, how much is the sponsorship worth, especially to sit on the front of the Springbok jersey?
So I'll say this to you, Gugu. I will give you a sense. To SARU's credit, SARU took a decision to work with an agency actually based in the UK called Wasserman to reconstruct their commercial program. So prior to the beginning of this year, they had approximately 25 partners. And they had too many partners, and I would almost call it, think of it like you've got lots of small houses on a very small piece of land. And so I think the decision was to commercially change the model and to try and give 5 to 7 partners big pieces of land. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they've been very successful at doing. If you're asking me, the entry point to become a partner to SARU, which now they have, in essence, they've put they've put all their rights into one basket. So if you want to be on the front of a jersey for the Springboks, you're going to be in the front of the jersey of the Springboks, the women's team, the Blitzbox, the under 20. And so you understand, it's a collective buy.
Yeah.
So you're not just buying one team as it was sold previously. And so to enter the Saru family is going to cost you between 20 and 25 million rand for the rights. To be on the back of the shirt and the back of the shorts, you're between 50 and 75 million rand. And to be on the front of the shirt, you're in the range of 125 to 160 million rand. I won't give you the exact number, but that's the investment.
This is big money. And I think also helps us understand that, as you say, it's a shift in the model and a shift in how this money will essentially filter down to all the different players. And maybe that's also something we need to understand, right? Because when we read about sponsorships, we typically think, oh, that means, and all the other players actually got this much. And it doesn't work like that. The money does go to an organization and there's other business activities that need to be paid for. But how does it have an impact? How does it ripple down, trickle down to the player and their income that they achieve and earn, essentially?
Right. So think of a sports, I suppose, let's just continue. Well, let's change it. Let's go to, I don't know, are you a Bucks supporter or are you a Sundowns?
I'm Sundowner? A Bucks supporter all the way. My dad's listening, so I need to impress him.
Okay, good. So think of, you know, the Bucks are basically like any business. They've got revenue at the top, the money comes in, and obviously they've got costs at the bottom, the money goes out. So like any organization, if you work for the biggest and the best businesses in the world or in South Africa or wherever you play or participate, if the revenue at the top is going to be significantly more than other, then your costs will obviously be, you know, they'll correlate with that because you'll pay more to get the best. And that's just the nature of business. And it's very much the same in sports. So if your business or your club or your franchise or your organization is in a very stable position and is generating significant revenues from broadcast, from ticket, from sponsorship, and other, those are your three primary streams in terms of revenue at the top, then you are going to be in a position to attract the best talent and you'll pay a premium for it, which means ultimately the athletes that participate are going to get paid more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it absolutely does have an impact in terms of the amounts the athletes will receive. So think about it. If you're playing for, you know, for Bucks, you're going to earn a lot more, generally speaking, than if you were playing for Magesi or for, you know, someone in the NFT.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, if you're playing for Real Madrid, you're going to earn significantly more than you do if you're playing for Pirates. So that's, you know, the more money at the top, there's definitely more money at the bottom.
Sheesh. Is it too late to change careers for me, Neil?
No, Kuku, you are ready. I don't know. You just tell me which sports and we'll get you there.
I love it. Neil, this conversation has been so informative and you've really taught us a lot just to look at things from a different perspective, have a better understanding of how there really is a business perspective to sports as well and the management of athletes in this regard. Such a pleasure speaking to you, Neil. Really appreciate it and looking forward to touching base with you again in future.
Thank you, Gugu, and thank you to all your listeners. Have a lovely evening.
Fantastic. For those of you who are listening to our conversation with Neil Jankelevitz, yes, hopefully I pronounced it correctly. He's the group CEO of Mohau Media Group, and we've been discussing the importance of talent management.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.